I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We are celebrating 20 years in business and just entering our seventh year of doing this program. We have a few exciting new changes. First, we have a new 2014 open line format that comes with launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication events tab on our homepage. Plus, our new book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icons on our homepage. Lighthouse has really been growing at a rapid pace over the last 36 months, which you can read about also on our website. Our topic today is operational productivity improvement. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, then we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. And we do this through our in-depth work style assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies in a variety of different services, including interpersonal coaching, executive onboarding for success, leadership training for the 21st century, exploring global options for expanding your business, sales and customer service training, and operational productivity improvement. Each of our open line programs helps to avoid getting stuck in shallow waters so our clients have smooth sailing. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. If you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from both many of our clients domestically and globally to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today, no matter where you are in the world. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible, so please join us with your thoughts and your insights we have along the way. Our special guest with us today is Ted Margeson, who's one of the nation's leaders in helping organizations to improve operational excellence by fine-tuning existing tools or processes or assisting in the selection of process for something new. Ted has over 30 years of experience working with both manufacturing and service organizations domestically and internationally. He has worked for Ernst & Young in their manufacturing distribution practice and headed up one of the PricewaterhouseCoopers manufacturing and distribution practices on the West Coast in the United States. Ted is one of our senior consultants and heads up our operational improvement practice for Lighthouse Consulting Services. I feel privileged to have Ted with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program, and the topic will be the IT Department for the 21st Century Organization, Aligning IT with Business Strategy. Welcome, everybody. We truly have a global audience today. And Ted, welcome to OpenLine once again.
Thank you very much, Dana. And thank you very much for that introduction. Can I get a copy of that? Or? Hello, everyone. Thank you for attending this webinar. Today, we're going to talk about a simple approach to improving productivity, one that has helped dramatically improve productivity in every company I've worked with. So whether you're in manufacturing, construction, logistics, travel, professional services, or insurance, this approach can help you. Now, first, let's take a look at the overview of the approach, and then I'll use an example to walk through the steps. I think we can all agree it's hard to be productive if you're making decisions based on bad information. Business processes are a series of decision-making points, so if a downstream decision has the wrong assumption about what it's supposed to accomplish, productivity suffers. The approach we're discussing here keeps you focused on key business goals. You can start with goals that you're struggling to achieve or ones that you're most concerned about. Another benefit of this approach is it can help you gain a competitive edge, as we'll see in the upcoming example. When you map current processes, it is important to identify both internal and external decision points, particularly if the external decisions drive internal decisions. Unfortunately, most companies take a four-wall approach and they never get the productivity they could have achieved. As the slide indicates, the objective is to find the blind spots. Blind spots meaning you're not entirely sure how a decision is being made. Once you've found this, you need to conduct a discovery to get the facts. Don't make assumptions about how it's being done. It's really important to go out and interview people and find out what's really going on. To really understand the decision-making efforts for people, you need to find out what their people are measured on. And if you think this only applies to external decisions, stay tuned until after the example. All right, let's just take a look at the example at this point.
Oh, Ted, one second before we do that, we had a question that came in. Can these ideas be used with lean efforts, whether it's manufacturing or service?
Good question, and absolutely. The objective of lean is to deliver value efficiently. So to make sure you really understand what is of value, you need to understand the external decisions, in particular, what the decision makers are measured on. I'll expand on that in the following example. So there's a couple of places where I can add that focus on the lean part.
Great, thank you.
All right, so in this example, this company sells safety equipment and protective gear. Pardon me. When I met with the general manager, he got a phone call from a very upset CEO of one of his largest customers. The CEO threatened to take away all their business if service levels didn't improve soon. Apparently, several production lines were down because some employees did not have the appropriate protective gear. When the call ended, the general manager told me, you got to do something to stop these calls. We've tried for 2 years to fix this. We put in a new ERP system. We tried specialized forecasting tools. We hired new personnel. We increased inventory. We streamlined delivery from the suppliers. Nothing works. And actually, he said, things seem to be getting worse. I'm really tired of getting these calls. So when we went out and took a look at their processes, the first thing we found out about is they had a typical process of get order, fill order, which is a four-wall view that has no insight into the customer's buying process. Now, the approach we're talking about here is essentially a back-to-basics approach to determine why is this problem occurring, what don't we know? After all, you can't control what you don't know. So the intent is, okay, something's happening. Let's find out what's driving this and understand what's driving it. So in the case of lean, so this is probably an insight. A lot of people have said, in companies I've worked at, well, when the customer orders something, that's what they want, right? There was a customer I worked with that was a footwear company that wanted to, they were about to get their new business with a catalog company, get their product into this major, it's a well-known catalog company. And so the salesperson had some samples. They met with a buyer, and the buyer was looking at the samples, having a hard time trying to decide, and the salesperson said, oh, I see you're wearing white shoes. We can get these in white. I don't have one, here in white, but we can do that. And the buyer said, okay. And so the salesperson came out and said afterwards to me, hey, look, we got an order. I go, geez, white of all things? That's got a special run. And she goes, yeah, but that's what they want. Look, I got the order. And she's waving it at me. I said, well, I'm not really sure that's what they want. Let's check on that when we meet with her manager. So about an hour later, we're meeting with her manager, and I asked, well, what do these people get measured on? He goes, returns. 23% is the target. It's the threshold. If you have less than 23%, we start looking at, expanding your coverage in the catalog. If you go over 23%, we have to cut you back. Now, so I said, well, here's our core product that in the standard catalog, it gets 18% returns. He goes, if you get below 20, you're getting an extra page. So we wrote the order, standard product, nothing special. The product runs all day long, and so it's not an expensive thing. The white product had a 32% return rate, which would have meant had we actually followed through with that sale, we would have been stuck with all those shoes that would have been returned. And we would have lost the contract with the catalog company, and we'd have all that product sitting in the warehouse with nowhere to go, which is hardly a lean approach. So in this case, we interviewed the top 20 customers and found that for the distributor of the protective gear, there were two processes that drove demand, one for replacement of worn-out product and another for new hires. And neither was well handled by the customers when it came to identifying the actual requirements for the protective gear. Not a surprise, actually, but surprise to that client because they thought the customers really knew exactly what was needed. But so what we looked at the replacement process. We determined that if to make effective decisions, we needed to be able to the customer needed to be able to identify the life expectancy for a product based on its use. And the use could be categorized based on the job position. Pardon me. Whoops. Slide jumped ahead. Sorry. So based on its use, which, as I said, could be categorized based on the job position and work environment. So we were able to identify some starting life expectancies, which would then be updated going forward. For example, if a particular product had a life expectancy of 36 months for a given job category, the rep would check in 30 months to determine whether to replace the product or extend the replacement period. If the decision was made to extend the replacement period, the life expectancy for the product would be updated for that job category. For new hires, the distributor could then recommend gear based on the job category. You want to hire somebody into this particular position and work environment? Here's the best product to have. Now, one thing that's to note, again, just following up on the lean question, is this type of discovery is absolutely crucial for service companies and companies that provide customers in order to sell what you deliver and deliver what you sell. I think you get the idea of that. So I won't go into that in more detail. Now, since the customers were handling these decisions, weren't handling these decisions very well, the goal was to insert the distributor in these decision points to help the customers make better decisions so they got the right product at the right time. For instance, for new hires, we would gather size information for each person and identify their job category during the hiring process. This gave the distributor better visibility on demand, and better visibility provides better control. So at this point, we've said, okay, here's what we think should happen from a decision point of view, and we went back, presented it to the top 20 customers. Enthusiastic response. You know, hey, you're going to take on all this decision-making for us? Hallelujah. It's been a pain in our butt. It's, you know, a nightmare. But if you're taking it on, we don't have to worry about this stuff anymore, and you're adding a lot of value to us. So often there's a temptation to just rush out then and automate these processes. The temptation was very strong in this particular case because five of the 20 customers said, we'll pay half the cost of the new system. Even without knowing what the system was going to cost, they were that enthusiastic about the new approach. But no matter how straightforward new process seems, you want to make sure that during the initial rollout of something, you're going to learn a lot of new things about that process, about what's happening. So that will change the specifics for the automation effort. The intent then should be to deploy these new processes as quickly as possible so you can start making the enhancement. You don't lose time and you've got enthusiastic people. You can start, you know, getting some feedback right away and making some inroads. And you want to implement it in a highly flexible and low-risk manner that can be refined quickly because, like I said, you're going to discover certain things along the way of using it. You want to be able to adapt quickly and not have invested in a huge infrastructure.
Hey, Ted, a question just came in. And by the way, if anyone wants to ask questions, please put it in the chat area. Whether it's a service or manufacturing organization, is it important to get feedback at all different levels within the organization to put into the new processes or potential new process?
So, excellent point, question. As you go and you refine these processes, so the change in this process, as you can see, they're at the customer side. They're saying, here's a new process for the customer on how we're going to identify demand and manage replacement and manage actual product flow. So it's important now to go downstream and look at all the changes that are involved and see how that affects each of the users in those areas. So it is like a cascading effect from that. And it is important then, because otherwise you'll be out of alignment if you don't do that effort.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Excellent question.
Thank you.
Pardon me. So in this case, we decided that we should focus on the top 20 customers, and let's just use Excel data, the documents. So we went out to each of the customers. Here's what we'd like from you. They were excited to provide the baseline information, and they gathered, the information from each of their sites about the current, workers, the job position, how many people they had, how long they'd had the product. And, it came in, and it came in some different variations from different customers, and we found certain responses, hey, this is better data, than what we'd initially asked, and so we were able to fine-tune going, forward to ask that additional information from other customers and even go back to some of the other ones and say, can you add some of this? So, again, that was, it's important to stay flexible, that kind of thing. I just go away?
No, you're good. You're good. You're back.
Okay. It just vanished off my screen. Sorry.
Okay. There we go.
We were able to gather all this information really quickly. It's a tool everybody's familiar with. It's easy for the customers to use to gather this information. Excel, like I said, very easy to use. So, again, it's a low-risk tool, highly flexible, able to then to deploy this, get all the information, and start implementing this whole new process in 2 months with these 20 customers. And over the next several months, as I said, we kept refining this process of how we get this information, how are we going to get updates, how are we going to track things, and we were able to refine it considerably such that when we finally automated the process and said, okay, look, it looks stable now, the cost was probably about a fifth of what it would have been had we tried to do it at the beginning. Now, after 1 year of this process being in place with 20 customers, and we ran it for about a year with just the 20 customers to make sure we ironed everything out, we got an increase of $30 million in sales from these customers. Some of them, like when we implemented this, some of them said, okay, you can bid on additional business that we're giving to other people. Others just said, look, you're managing the decision. You can have all the business. So it was, it gave us a chance to dramatically increase sales without a huge infrastructure cost. And because basically we had the, better visibility from this because the distributor is managing the whole decision-making process, they could control the product flow, and essentially they bought everything to order. So at the end of the year, it's kind of like, okay, all those additional sales, no inventory left. Bought it, sold it. One of the customers actually told their rep, he said, it wouldn't matter what discount your competitors offered, knowing we're not going to have downtime is worth more than the price of the product. So this kind of, an effort or undertaking, just something that simple of now we're going to, help on these decision points here, help that customer get a competitive edge. they basically locked in all these customers to this business.
Ted, another question just came in. It's kind of interesting. Looking at improving processes, is it helpful to identify a specific customer base, and then they feel very valued because they're a partner at that point, again, whether it's service or manufacturing?
Yes. And typically when I'm in at a company, we're looking at their core customers because those are the ones you want to keep. And everywhere I've done this, those customers feel very special. They become a partner in the solution. So excellent question, and that's absolutely the best way to go. If you've got some, different markets that you're in and you want to take two or three, customers in each of those market segments and work on that, you don't want to overdo the company, so it depends on the size of the company and resources you've got. You might just pick one market segment and then move on to others. But typically finding the core customers in each of those segments is an ideal approach. And they do feel special. One other customer that I worked with was a distributor, and they felt, they actually said, hey, Ted, we have to be able to turn orders around the same day that we get them. That'll give us a dramatic competitive edge, because right now it's taking a couple of days to fill the order, and if we could do same day delivery, that would give us, the market. So I looked at the product and I thought, it doesn't make sense that people would buy this thing. Basically, this product runs on production lines or in amusement parks. If it breaks, the ride is down or your product. It wouldn't make sense for them not to have spares around. So eventually we called in, again, 20 customers in this case, and we organized that the president of the company, we want to get to know you better and understand your business so we can see how to add value. That was the framing of it. The people came in and they started describing their process and when they would know whether or not they needed that company's product. Every one of those people, every single one could give at least 6 months notice. One of them could give 12 months notice. They described the process and what they do, and it was like, at this point, I know whether I'm going to close the business, the sale, so it's still in the sales mode. And he said, and when so I can tell you at that point, or a month later, if we, when we close the business, I can let you know, but I don't need your product for about 11 months after that point. And the president looked at him, and he said, well, then why are you giving us only 2 days lead time at this point? He goes, well, because that's the lead time he gave purchasing. So, but if you'd like, I can tell you everything I'm closing in the sales process. I'll send you an Excel document. We're like, hallelujah. Go back to the, we went to the supplier and said, look, if I can get you, this much visibility, we're a $20 million company. The supplier was a $2.7 billion company, so we're pretty small. But the VP of Ops said, if you can give us this kind of visibility, you can call me up to 5 o'clock Chicago time. That's where they were based. Friday, and I will make sure whatever you need is on the truck Monday morning. If you will have this kind of visibility for me and a predictable supply cycle, that's what I'm going to do for you. So having those customers involved up front, even 20 of those, is valuable, and it also helps in many other areas of the company. And it's a much faster deployment effort.
That's phenomenal. Ted, also, I think our chat box might have gotten jammed up. So if anyone has a question as we're moving along, just send a note to Dana, D-A-N-A, at lighthouseconsulting.com, and we'll respond. So it's Dana at lighthouseconsulting.com. All righty. Ted, keep going.
Great, I talked ideas about external decision points, and so now we're going to take a look at internal efforts. Okay, this one, oddly enough, this is one of the biggest challenges for companies. betting on this as a problem is better than being the house in Vegas. If somebody called me up and said, Ted, I got a problem with something, you know, our internal process, I could bet on this before I walked in the door, and probably 99.9% of the time I'd be right. When things aren't performing well, it's usually because no one's accountable for the performance. It's that simple. And accountability is more than roles and responsibilities. It covers the ownership, the span of control. If you say to somebody, oh, yeah, this person owns, you know, all our, you know, inventory amounts, but they don't manage forecasts, they're managing only the supply side, then if forecast sales says, I need twice as much, or if a staffing company is going, well, I'm going off of our salespeople's forecasting on the new business they're going to close, then somebody can't own both sides of the fence if they don't have that the span of control for both sides of the fence. The accountability is also needs to address, includes, you know, performance measurements. So if somebody's, they're accountable for inventory accuracy, but we only measure them on what time they came to work, then the performance measurements out of line with what they're accountable for. And reward recognition. If people get yelled at for not showing up for work, but because the inventory accuracy or customer service levels are, you know, really poor and customers are complaining, if they're not getting yelled at for that, they're not going to respond. So that's a simple example of a reward recognition, but it usually comes down to something that simple, and we're going to see that in a moment. So,
Question just came in through email. Again, if you have a question, just email dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. Question is around monitoring customer service for reward recognition. Could you talk a little bit more about how that works?
So is this
from a feedback
customer
standpoint,
service people or
The
service
department
levels
itself,
to customers.
Are there key indicators other than poor ratings?
So, there again, it depends on what your the business objectives are. What you've identified is a value to the customer. So typically, the customer wants to get the right answer as quickly and as effectively as possible. If you have to hand this off to three or four people and there's a 20-minute wait each time, obviously that's not delivering the value the customer wants. So somehow you have to determine how do you know if it's the right answer, and you have to be able to determine, you know, how to deploy that as quickly as possible to people. There are some survey methods that people use, so they have, you know, automated survey. I did help somebody with the customer. I send them a survey, and they can fill it out and say whether I did a good or, you know, job or not. Those are helpful to a point, but typically if a lot of people are happy, they don't respond. So you do have to have some other monitoring techniques that are in place to measure those performance factors.
Okay.
Did that... Dana?
That's really helpful because
okay.
The whole time and monitoring every part of the customer service level is so important because you could be losing people while focusing on other areas in the business, and if people aren't responding in a rapid manner that is needed based on the market, it sounds simple.
Yes.
Sounds very simple, but
and I think, you know, just a side note on that. One of the other things that are valued to a customer is somebody cares. When you call up customer service and you want help, you want to feel that somebody cares about that kind of thing. So I think, you know, if you said, yeah, here's what's of value to the customer, then how are we going to measure we're delivering that value, and we'll reward or recognize people accordingly? I'm sure everybody knows lots of examples of customers or companies that have horrible customer service. It's like, we couldn't care less. You bought our product, what do I care? We made the sale. So it depends on the company culture as well for the customer service department.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Just as I think it's, I was about to say that in this case, if you're thinking rate at this point, you looked at this and you said accountability. If you're thinking, that's not an issue for us, wait till the last slide. So, all right. And that's coming soon. Okay. So when you're doing an assessment on accountability or you're trying to establish accountability, you're building up a new, you know, process or department, it helps to define the processes based on transaction characteristics. So what do I mean by transaction characteristics? As an example, a manufacturing company we work with uses quotes for all sales. A lot of service companies, same thing, use quotes for a sale. Now, in this case, management was concerned about engineering's handling of the quotes. According to the management, engineering took way too long to get all these quotes turned around, and they weren't doing a very good job. So they had apparently an auto-quoting mechanism, so if somebody came in and was ordering something standard item, or if a service was standard service, here was the standard price. But if they wanted something a little bit different, that's when it went to engineering. So we looked at all the non-standard quotes, and it appeared that a lot of them were like just variations on a theme, or as they call it, configured to order. And only a few were truly 100% custom. So we asked engineering why they're handling all these, you know, configured to order quotes. "We don't," was their reply. Going back to management, they had no idea. Who does these things? There's 70 employees, and no one knew who was handling these quotes. So we finally tracked it down to one employee in four temps, operating without any guidelines, producing quotes that were either substantially overpriced or badly underpriced. Out of 3,000 quotes a month, this group handled 2,000 quotes. Years ago, apparently, all the quotes were driven over to engineering. Somebody just said, okay, if it's not standard, engineering, you handle it. Well, it didn't take engineering long to figure out that, hey, we're not going to look good handling all these little things, and we're spending so much time on just the custom stuff. We'll just get rid of all those variations of a theme, and they gave it to somebody, said, here, you look after it. And then he went out because it started to build. He got some temps to help him, and off it went, and nobody knew what was going on. Had management distinguished between those two types of quotes at the outset, they could have set up a better set of processes and accountability for getting these things done. Now, there's a difference between transaction characteristics and breaking a process into tasks. A lot of companies make the mistake of implementing point solutions. By that I mean they take a process, they break it into tasks, and then they hire people to address each set of tasks. A service company that we worked with provides staffing to their clients. They decide that, I'm going to divide managing their field staff into all these different tasks: recruiting, onboarding, training, new client implementation, and ongoing site staff management. Great. So who's accountable for the overall performance of a field employee? Nobody. Who's accountable for providing the right service level to a client? No one. Every point solution means a handoff, which is, in effect is a crack. If I stop, I'm done and I'm handing it off to somebody else, that's an opportunity for something to fall through the crack. So no surprise for this company. All these people are spending all their time in endless meetings, firefighting all the things that fell through the cracks, and trying to coordinate future efforts. It's amazing how much time gets spent in these meetings every week. So another aspect of this is when I'm talking to people, what is that person doing? Oh, this is what they're doing. This is what they get measured on because here's their job description. Or, of course they're doing that, Ted. I mean, that's their job. If their job is to take the order or to produce this or make, that's what they're, they're getting measured on the quality and how well they turn it around. So an aerospace and defense company I was at, this is kind of a painful thing to say maybe, but they told us, hey, we just wrote off $6 million in the past 4 months. There has to be something wrong with our ERP system, you know, because what else could be causing this problem? Well, after talking to a number of people, got to the shop floor and asked them, and they said, hey, we're told just ship the product. If we can't find the right paperwork, we use whatever's available to get the product out the door. We get yelled at, the product doesn't ship. We don't get yelled at if the system is wrong. Like the scary or painful part behind this is, just think of that, they're using some other job with all that lot tracking and that's going into aeroplanes. Not a good thing. So you would think that their job is, I got to track all this, the quality. If you looked at all the workflow documentation, if they had a huge amount of TQM, actually a large group of TQM people, black belts that came out, designed the workflow and all the processes. I saw the documentation. They actually came out again after this discovery, went through the whole thing again, taught everybody, trained everybody, left. A few months later, I got called back. They were still having the write-offs. I asked the guy on the floor. He goes, I still get yelled at. Nothing's changed. It's like, okay, you went through the process, but did you change the accountability? In effect, in this case, did you change the reward recognition system? Nope. Then no change. So, okay. Last one. So this is my first meeting with this company. They're looking at selecting a new ERP system, and they're concerned about implementation. So, oh, we heard from one of our customers, they're implementing this system, it was SAP, I think, and they have horrible nightmares, just horrible stories. I hear about all these horrible stories. We operate very well here, and so if there's something wrong on the implementation, it's got to be the package or the people implementing it. Okay. Ted, what kind of problems have you seen in implementation? I went, well, maybe it doesn't apply here, but accountability is a big challenge for most companies. And so he said, well, that's not a problem here. Everybody understands what they're accountable for. Go ahead, give me an example. Well, companies with inventory problems often find no one's accountable for inventory accuracy. So he turns to the president, he goes, hey, that's not an issue for us. Dave, tell him who's accountable for inventory accuracy. Dave looked at him and goes, no one. Maybe that's why we got that $14 million write-off. And this is 10 minutes into the meeting with this company. It really is a major challenge for most companies. And for some reason, it's often overlooked. Even when I go to companies, I go, here's an accountability issue. They struggle with being able to do anything with it. And yet it's a very straightforward process to resolve, you know, the whole issue. And from a performance point of view, it's a major impact on performance.
So a question just came in. Again, our chat box is not working for some reason, so if you want to email me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com, we'll respond to questions. So from an accountability standpoint, how do you train individuals, or maybe it's within a workflow process, to not go, oh, I've passed it off, it's their issue now?
So, one, like that staffing company I mentioned, That should have been that you've got to redesign it. Unfortunately, if you've gone down that point solution, you really have to redesign it because you've created all those cracks. And nobody owns it. So the problem they have is the person goes, I did my job really well. Yeah, but you did your job really well, but that's your view, is this narrow a view. And unfortunately, when it gets downstream to the person three down, things are not as good as they should be. You know, so it could be that, well, my job was just to recruit the people. I recruited X number of people. And somebody else's job is to train them. And then the training person goes, well, somebody didn't hire really well. No, you didn't train really well. And then if they got fired after they've been on the job for, you know, a couple of months because maybe they're not doing well, then the site manager is going, what happened with the training? And the training's going, well, recruiting. And then recruiting's going, but the site people aren't managing it. So it's really difficult with a point solution to overcome the problem. Now, in this case, it was unfortunate. One of the people had made a suggestion, which I thought was brilliant. He said, let's look at some of the best in class and see what they do. And so we looked at a few others in this case, and they basically had one person whose job it was to go for a particular site, or and they would recruit, and they would make sure the people got onboarded correctly. They would make sure the training people came in. Even though they're not doing the training, they would make sure that everything was taken care of from beginning to end. So I find the people. I make sure they get onboarded. I make sure they get trained. I make sure they show up for work. And if their performance isn't good, I'm going to fire them. And I'm getting compensated based on that level of performance and the costs associated with supporting that particular site. That way, one person is accountable from the beginning to end. And if things aren't going well, they're going to refine how they recruit because it affects them directly. Also, just to add, because this is one other major problem. Also, if I have to go and say, look, I need all the records about this person, I've got one person to go to. I can't tell you the problems we have in cleaning up a mess in this one other place where I have to go to five people and nobody, like, they ended up keeping separate records. Because it was like, well, I wanted to track the information for this employee this way, and somebody else tracked it. So it wasn't long before, although they had a computer system in place, there were all these little spreadsheets all over the place. And the information didn't connect. It didn't match up. So we had actually bad data about all these employees, over 1,000 employees in the field.
And what a great example. And I know from talking to a number of clients, you could have a customer service discussion with different departments on how they're interfacing, and one department will say, oh, well, we have protocols all spelled out. The other department will say, oh, we didn't know that. Could you share that with us? And it doesn't matter what size company you have, whether you have 25 or 30 people or a couple thousand people or a couple hundred people. These things get out of hand. And if it's not orchestrated, it just becomes a mess and loss of business and revenue.
Yeah, and unfortunately, particularly if a company is growing quickly, it's a horrible nightmare. This staffing company is actually, they're growing fairly quickly. They only have 50 employees though, at the corporate office, and they're managing, I guess right now it's like 1,600 field staff people.
Wow.
And they're hoping to double that. Now, here's the problem. They start recruiting, and they're bringing people on. I got to get some more recruiters. So I'm out looking for recruiters, I'm looking for onboarders, I'm looking for trainers, I'm looking for site people to manage it. And I get two people I'm bringing on board in one department, and the other ones are lagging a bit, or maybe they get three people. And so, even though it's got regions, because the staffing isn't coming up at the same time, it's kind of like these people are doing stuff and handing it off to people who aren't really sure what's going on, or they're overloaded now. And so more things fall through the cracks. Even if they're trying to bring somebody up to speed, since nobody owns the whole thing, each person is just scrambling to, I got to recruit how many people? Okay, I'll just try and get that part done. Just get the number of people and toss it over the wall to the next person. And it'll be their problem. Because, they're new. They don't want to get fired right away. So, again, there's no end-to-end ownership for that overall process. And it just introduces more chaos.
So that it goes back to controls and listening and being respectful and asking questions.
Well, yes, in order not to have a meltdown in this case, at some point they're going to have to restructure this entire process. It's gotten, they cannot double now with this structure. That's how bad the accountability, or the point solution, has become for them. In rapid growth mode, it's going to kill them.
Okay. All right. Ted, how about a recap of what we covered today for, again, service and manufacturing companies?
Okay.
Things
so
to think about.
Two things. The basically, the intent is to, okay, focus on the key business goals that you're trying to accomplish and start at that point as opposed to some companies start with, oh, I'm just going to try and improve this process. And it's so far disconnected from the, well, I've actually seen people work on things that you would, when you look at the bigger picture, you go, just get rid of it. It doesn't add value. So you want to start with, okay, here are the business goals. Let's map out all the processes and, you know, associated with those and the decision points that are there. Let's make sure we understand all the drivers and make sure everything is lined up. So you're looking for blind spots in the decision-making process. When you figure out, okay, here are the decisions and how can we improve this, once you've changed that part, you then have to go, of course, downstream and realign all the other decision processes to make sure you get the right results. So with that in mind, you need to look at both external decisions and internal decisions. And when you come to internal decisions, you need to look at the accountability process. And in particular, if you can find first, this person is going to be accountable. They're the business owner for this process, you know, all the tasks that are involved, and maybe it's just for this client or just for this customer, or maybe it's a product segment or some other market. As long as they own all of those end-to-end, start from there, and then you can actually work from there on, hear all the decisions that they have to make. And what are the steps that they have to go through? So that's the key part. Make sure you map out the business processes and decision points. And in the internal area, make sure you've got a good definition or assignment of accountability. If you find it's fragmented, have to redesign the overall organization structure or the organization structure in that area.
That's usually the biggest issue we hear about. I think all of us here across the board, and most of you listening today have frustrations around, is accountability. I thought you did this. No, I thought you were responsible for this. How did that go out to our client that way? Who was responsible for that? And it's just an ever-ending cycle, isn't it?
True. And a lot of companies feel like they're stuck. Well, this is what I've got. How am I going to transition? Which is, that's another discussion. but the key is, at that point, you have to transition. There's certain approaches to doing it that make it a lot easier than others. But as I say, that's another discussion unto itself.
Okay. Well, Tal, why don't we go to the last slide here? And I want to thank everyone for attending today. You'll see in your screen an area to register for our upcoming May 20th Open Line program. It's entitled IT Department for the 21st Century. It's going to be around aligning IT and business strategy. Please sign up today and reserve a space for yourself and let us know if you'd like staff or other colleagues to attend. In the next few days, you're going to receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. Please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Ted and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that were shared. If you'd like to contact Ted to have further discussion on specifics about your industry, your organization, to have some one-to-one time together, or to discuss any ideas that were shared today, you'll see Ted's contact information on the screen. The information shared today is a property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, just let us know, and thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Have a great day. Ted, you know what, let's open up the line, and let me turn the recording off, and we'll open the line, see if anybody has any questions for you.
Okay.